of time. They say that's the best way to start a talk. So I'm inviting every one of us to go back to when we were a little boy or a little girl. Can you think back that far? Just get in touch with what it was like for you on your best Christmas. What that sense of feeling connected to something special and magical in your life. You got there? You're there yet? Okay, all right, let's go.
An angel came to see Mary. She was doing laundry, and then the angel just appeared and she was really scared. So Gabriel was like, Mary, you're going to have what? Mary, you're going to have a baby. You're going to have a baby. You will call him Jesus. And then Mary was like, I'm not going to have a baby yet. I'm only a teenager. I'm not married. And the angel Gabriel told Joseph that Mary is not lying. You are having a baby. And so they met up. They went to Bethlehem, which was Joseph's old town.
They ride a donkey. Oh, a camel. Oh, yeah, a camel. She said, this donkey's fast. They tried to go to a hotel, and
they asked the keeper for a place to stay. The keeper said,
we have no rooms. Literally, no rooms.
So Mary and Joseph walked away sadly, but then he said,
the only place and here in Bethlehem that you can stay is a stable, and then he just pointed the way and they followed. When the shepherds were taking care of the sheep,
then they saw angels.
The angel said, a new baby is getting born, who is king of the Jews.
The angel were singing.
And then the shepherd said, I think we should go there and meet him. Second, Christine said, yeah, I agree with you. And the other said, yeah, me too. They had to walk through a bunch of grass and bushes, maybe have to camp out at night. Then the wise men heard about it.
And then a star appeared.
Well, we should probably follow that star. It's pointing down to the barn.
So maybe we should follow it. Maybe. So the wise men went to Jesus.
They gave them gifts.
A stuffed animal, like a hippo one, to have at home.
Some diapers, and some wipes, some milk, some shoes, some Jordans.
Gold ring and Latimer.
And I don't know how it would survive in that barn. Too stinky, too crowded, and ugh.
I think he probably pooped because the room was very smelly.
Thank you for coming.
He's adorable.
He's gonna be our best friend.
I love you, and you're the best baby I ever seen. That was it.
New baby is gonna change the world.
So that was fun, wasn't it? So it's complicated, isn't it? I mean, really, when we think about it, it's not only a time when we can get in touch with that inner child and reconnect to the magic of this holiday season and be inspired by the hymns and the music and the decorations. But in the midst of all of that, there's all kinds of life experiences that people have. And including in our spiritual community, right now we have people going through loss, through struggle, through illness. And it's sometimes a challenge to kind of allow the season to really be uplifting and inspiring when the reality of our life, it's complicated. It's filled with all kinds of conflicting messages and ways in which we're supposed to be. And if there's family involved in that chemistry of complication. You know, it makes it even a bittersweet sometimes dynamic as well. And when we have relatives that are far away, there's all kinds of things that make this season both special as well as a challenge, as well as something that makes it complicated. And I believe that part of what also feeds into that sense of Christmas being complicated, especially when we invest a lot of energy in the hope that this season brings us into relationship to, the sense that and the yearning that peace on earth and goodwill towards all is what we are to aspire to be the avenue through which that experience can manifest. But that's not necessarily what we connect up this season to be about, our own experience of manifesting or expressing a greater sense of spirit and presence that this season invokes. We are challenged to kind of be in that mood or that state, but at the same time have to reconcile it with what's happening in our life. And part of my struggle as someone who is in this role of being a voice of principle or of spirit or of even our theological context, we struggle in a sense that here's the baby Jesus being born to be king, or at least bring forth a kingdom that is aligned with this concept or principle of spirit, of oneness, of the kingdom of God is within us. God has already given us that the whole sense that Christianity is really about bringing forth this expression that Jesus embodied, but somehow that sense that Jesus was here to be the model of the embodiment of what it means to live a life where your religion is love. Our Christianity, our Christian cultural context has sort of lost that message. At least it seems, because as I look out at the world and as I look at those who espouse to be Christian, there's some hypocrisy in that. That's the most polite way I can say it. And that affects how I'm able to kind of throw myself into the fullness of the season, because I see that we have really abandoned in some fashion why the legacy that Jesus as a child was born into demonstrating. And that we've instead got lost up in the dynamics of what's happening in the world that divide us and separate us, and then we go to Scripture for the justification to kind of do the things that we do. And you think about all the wars that have been created in the name of Spirit, in the name of God. So part of how I reconcile the dynamic that our Christian heritage and the context of our theology being metaphysical as opposed to literal, The struggle is to really make relevant our practice of celebrating the birth of Jesus in the context of what he represents as our effort to emulate what his teaching and embodiment was. So part of the help in being able to go there for me has been to differentiate what could be described as the religion of Jesus and the religion about Jesus. That our Christian heritage is the religion about Jesus. I was raised in Catholicism. And so if you're raised Catholic, you have a certain brand of how you view the world in the context of Jesus Christ's mission. If you're raised a Baptist or an Episcopalian, you know, Catholic light, you have... You know, all of the savings and half the guilt. That's... Never heard that before. So for me, when I can differentiate the religion about Jesus from what Jesus stood for, what his life and teaching was all about, then I can see that the celebration of the baby Jesus is really a mirror or a representation of my journey. My journey is to arrive out of my innocence and into the intention to know my worth and to make a difference and to extend this experience, this embodiment of love as a part of what I bring. That's my gift unto the world. That's my purpose. That's a part of me having a transformative life experience. And so as I be in this question, what was Jesus's intentionality? And as I kind of remember that the Christ child was born to fulfill something, and also to remember that I was born to fulfill something, every one of us was born to fulfill something. The problem is that none of us had Mary and Joseph as our parents. We didn't get the message that we are the one unto our life, here to make the difference. But instead, we took on other beliefs about ourselves. And then we looked towards authorities to give us a sense of if we're okay or not. We looked towards religion to answer the big questions of life, as opposed to looking at how the master teachers lived their life and discern what the reality of their experience was and how we can enter into that same experience. And so as I, you know, work with my own struggle to kind of open myself to the benefit of living in the magic of my inner child basking in all the wondrous feelings of the season, I can only do that when I realize that what Jesus was trying to describe in the context of his religion was the power of what love is as we actualize it in our life. And so as we just be in the question, when love is our religion, how does that inform how we're being in our world? And can we not begin to build upon that as our theology, as opposed to some external kind of institutionalized, prescribed, branded way in which we kind of engage in our celebrations and our traditions? You know, Jesus, if we look at the life and teachings of Jesus, we will see that he was balking the system. His ministry was to stand against the conformity, the bondage that people lived in, and the intolerance that existed in those times. And so he basically described that, you know, I'm breaking all the rules. This is the rule from now on. You got to love each other. And I'm modeling what that looks like. And as a matter of fact, that's how people will know that you're my disciples, is that you're able to embody this that I have taught. And as I see that that was his mission, was to bring people into discipleship in the context of living love as our spiritual path, it makes perfect sense. And it also makes perfect sense that I would want to be a disciple of Jesus, because the word disciple means student. And to recognize that I have to be taught how to live as love being embodied. I have to learn how to do that, because I haven't been able to figure that out all by myself without having a sense of discipleship. But Jesus is not the only teacher I have in my life. Dr. Joe, I'm a disciple of his work. I'm a disciple of Ken Wilber's work. I'm a disciple of my Tai Chi teacher, Master Steve Wong. And as I've looked at my journey, I have needed masters in my life to guide me. And so discipleship is not an aversion, but when we recognize that in our effort to really inhabit the reality that this season calls us into owning and accepting, we have to be able to enter into that intentionality with sincerity, with desire, with a sense that we're called to make a difference. One of the differences that we need to kind of recognize is that absence of having love as our religion, everything that we do to ourselves, comes back to us in the sense that, as Jesus says, that's what you have done to the least of my brothers and sisters, you've also done unto me. And when we live in the awareness of love as our religion, that is not just a slogan or a principle. It is a guiding reality. We wouldn't want to do something to someone else that we would also not want for ourselves. It's more than the golden rule. It's enabling us to have a sense of what matters most in any given situation, because whatever we put out is really coming back to us. So we're either putting out our Karmageddon, or we're living in the reception of what happens when we're just a witness to love at work in our life. There's another dimension of this that calls us into doing stuff. We have to do this work of living our religion. Religion is not a passive acceptance. It's rather, when we use the expression, "I did this religiously," we understand what that means. We've gone beyond just the casual intentionality, but we've taken on something because our life depends upon it. What if our life depends upon our doing, our being the avenue out of which something comes forth that could not otherwise be a necessary good unless it came from the context of who we are in our heart of hearts, coming from love? And let all that you do be done in love. And what if we were just to let that saying be the context for all of our actions? Is this that I'm about to do, does this bring forth greater love, greater connection, greater kindness, greater sensitivity, greater understanding? Or am I needing to be right? Or am I having to have things be a certain way? If we're not allowing our teachers to cause us to have to rethink how we're being with what we're having, then we miss the opportunity to really align ourselves with principles that can amplify our capacity to feel empowered and to make a difference. I'm going to introduce right now two practices that help us do this activity of being the expression of love in our life. And these are two very simple practices. They come from the Buddhist tradition, but they really embody the essence of what Jesus is calling forth in us, and that is to love one another. And to recognize that the birth of Christ, that principle of you and I are the one unto our life, can only be unleashed in the context that we're all in this together, that we have to love one another. And so loving kindness is a profound recognition that our lives have something to do with one another, that everyone counts, that everyone matters. And if we don't abide in that sense that everyone counts and everyone matters, we have stepped outside of our wholeness. And the way back in to the sense of feeling our sense of connection, our oneness, the interbeing, this dimension of ourself that is complete and full, is to begin to affirm that principle and truth and extend it beyond ourself. So loving kindness, also in the Buddhist tradition, is called metta, and the loving kindness practice is just about sending love wherever it's needed. So to have a daily practice where you just get heart-centered, just as we do every Sunday, and just be in the intentionality to know some things for the world, for ourselves, and for everyone. Now, may there be peace on earth. May the hearts of all people be open to themselves and to each other. May all people awaken to the light of their own true nature. May all creation bless you. Be blessed to be and to be a blessing to all that is. And there are various forms of loving kindness meditations. You can just Google and you'll have a lot of different versions of it. But it always begins with the understanding that there's me and then there's the rest of us, and we really all want the same thing. Now, just as I want to be happy, may all beings experience happiness. Just as I want to be free from suffering, may all beings be free from suffering. Just as I want to experience fulfillment, may all beings find fulfillment in their life. And to be able to recognize that energetic alignment opens our field, and we allow ourselves to be connected to influences that are not of this world. And some of you know what I mean. When we connect up to the to the field of infinite possibilities. When we connect up to divine intelligence, we connect up to the dimension that is literally the angelic realm. And if you want to believe in that sort of thing. And there are times that I want to believe in that sort of thing. The other practice is called Tonglen. And let's see, I thought I changed this slide, but anyway. Tonglen is a process of really dealing with the pain and suffering that we experience and that we witness in the world. And to recognize that part of our challenge, part of our work is to be present to that and to be with it in such a way as that we enable those who are in that experience, including ourselves, to somehow be lifted up with love, compassion, empathy. And so while on the dark side of our human experience, we can feel pain and suffering, fear and anger, on the light side of our human experience, we connect up to spirit where there's love, there's joy, there's forgiveness, there's empowerment. But it begins in this context of a practice that helps us unpack the dynamic and helps us focus on what is essential. So here it is, so I can read it. Taking in the pain and suffering of ourselves and others and sending out happiness to all. So that's what we're doing. And there's really two aspects of this practice, and it has to do with breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in what is painful and what is unwanted with a sincere wish that we and others be free from suffering. And I just invite you to feel that right now. To feel that we can be in the presence of pain and what is unwanted and be in that same experience, that sincere yearning and hope that ourselves and others be free from suffering. And then the second step is to drop the story that goes along with the pain and to open our hearts to what arises. Exhale and send relief from the pain with the intention that we and others be happy. And as we get into this intentionality to be present to the suffering of life, we'll see that that was something that Jesus did as a part of his ministry. He was present to those who were suffering. And it wasn't for the purpose necessarily of freeing them from the suffering in the sense that that was his job, but part of the job was to allow love to find its way into people's lives. And just to be the way of love in another person's life is a gift. And it's not that we have to fix or do anything. We just have to be willing to be present and breathe into that presence in the sense that all is well. Come unto me, all ye who are burdened and heavily laden, and I shall give ye rest. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's that's the nature of love. And that's the nature that enables us to recognize our own worth as we're able to give expression to that. So as I wrap this thing up, I'm at a place now where I see that, you know, the diversity of world religions is really a mirror of the potentiality that the humanity is the one race. And in that spirit, I can let go of all the ethnicities that there are in the world without diminishing or feeling a sense of loss, because all the ethnicities are comprised the humanity that we all embody as one race, the human race. And if that's the meta reality, our oneness, we're all in the same humanity, then religion, the love is our religion. It has to be that way because that's the only way that we can honor the humanity as our race, as our common ancestry. So I'm going to leave you with a short saying from Emmett Fox, a well-known New Thought leader. There is no difficulty that enough love will not conquer. No door that enough love will not open. No gulf that enough love will not bridge. No sin that enough love will not redeem. It makes no difference how deeply seated may be the trouble, how hopeless the outlook, or how great the mistake. A sufficient realization of love is enough to dissolve it all. If only you can love enough, you'll be the most powerful beings in the world. So, remember, love is the reason for this season. God bless you.